June 22nd, 1977, House Committee on Revenue and School Finance.
I'd like to run a concept by the committee on 3257. Just have an outline for you. That you recall is the small woodlot bill that we deferred action on. And what I'd like to do is just have outlined for us some proposed amendments. We don't have anything in writing at this point, but we have the folks from the Small Woodlot Association here. And if you folks want to join us, just briefly, what I thought we'd do is just spend 5 minutes or so just outlining what they're talking about. And then that we would come back and go to work on it tomorrow. I constantly can get a bill out of the road order, and I'll explain to you what amendments we need to accept. And on Friday, if there's no objection to the committee, I'd like to finish our treatment, hopefully forever, of Peter Park by just raising the Eastern Oregon land value question that we couldn't resolve in the context of the big bill, but there are folks from Eastern Oregon who would like to come and just share their analysis of how we might be able to adopt the formula in the event that it survives the minority report challenge tomorrow, how it could be applied to Eastern Oregon. If it's on Friday morning, is that okay? I'll be here tomorrow. I see you needed. That's what I talked to you to John. Very briefly, who joined the client? Okay. And Chairman, my name is Joe Satterfield. With the good Northwest Efficiency Association. The other members, well, most of the members of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. In the original discussion of 3257, which was about 2 weeks ago on a Wednesday night or Thursday night, there was, I believe, the discussion of the a major discussion that pertained to Section 3, which had to do with setting values and then freezing those values at 50% of the calculated values of site costs and land values. And that was described as an unsatisfactory approach to the problem. And I think we agree that it is an unsatisfactory approach to the problem. 3257 changes the small women, amends the small women law in 4 or 5 significant areas. This law has increased the acreage to 2,000 from 1,000 and sets a minimum acreage of 10 acres. Be eligible under the small crop option law. There is a grandfather clause for those people who may have less than 10 acres that can still stay under it. There is a management plan incorporated in the process based on the elements of the forest practice of that. The law would be changed to provide for a notification procedure similar to that which is in 3274, 60-day notification procedure. It would provide for an appeals procedure which is not in the current law, which is now being challenged in the courts, I believe. And it would establish Christmas trees as an agricultural crop not subject to a harvest tax. The consensus says the smaller owners and Christmas tree growers use that section 3, which exceeds the value, the site cost value at 50%, as described in the bill, should be deleted. And that the existing law will take care of the situation, in that the existing law says that all the costs of growing a timber are supposed to be taken into account. And there's discussion, has been with the Department of Forestry, that perhaps all those costs aren't being taken into account. That indeed is what 3257 would do to the existing small crop option law. There's other language in here which makes it compatible with other statutes and
rationalizing the acreage requirements, putting a rational minimum and perhaps increasing maximum, and trying to go at the problem of valuation in terms of what factors, in terms of the formula, rather than freezing the value, seems to me to be far superior. And it seems to me that just in terms of the way it's been described, we can get a bill that is non-controversial enough that we can actually get the thing through in relatively short order. And if it meets with the committee's approval, what we'll start off tomorrow with just going over the bill, and there's one other amendment we might consider, we might be able to do in 3257, and that's to, we might discuss the potential of converting from this to the provisions of the yield tax after harvest, discuss the issue of convertibility and see what, if anything, we might want to add to make to encourage it. If we allowed such conversion as an alternative to other changes, I would like to not as an alternative to other changes, but along with it, the issue of conversion. We move towards the point of having just one law. I think that's a merit. But we will have the notebook, the issues prepared, and you folks, some of you will be able to join us tomorrow. Is that fair? And I, Greg, is there anything you wanted to add that people
want to on the notification? Apparently, you can be disqualified if you don't file within 60 days after a change of ownership, but may be by reason of death. And this is one of the changes they proposed, but they don't propose a retroactive change. And there have been a number of people that have been caught in that bind, and really it's nothing like tax avoidance at all.
I feel not knowing. Yeah, I'm sorry for not mentioning it. I feel very strongly that we ought to make it retroactive so we don't pot people who have not changed the use, where it's been by a debt, this land is, title of land is passed by death in the family, and it's, I think that it's unduly harsh, and if there's no objection,
that's a good point. That's excellent, because there are two or three real sad cases right now, and just no redress for those.
So we'll come prepared tomorrow to try and deal with it in those terms. Could we have Richard and Greg, are they, we have a quorum. Let's maybe ask, not Richard and Greg, but Terry and Richard perhaps join us I would also like, if you could see, if our friend could be called, see who's coming, I would like to look at, from the committee, see if all are on their way.
All right. We talked about some possible amendments to 542 now. Do you?
What's 542?
The roll phase.
To operating Bay 11.
Oh. Well, if you limit it 3 years, I think somebody mentioned it to me. But I don't help hold it out.
Okay.
I'm not really enthusiastic.
Let's, if there's no objection, I would like to, we're going to switch subjects. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Which would be
okay. 543, you recall, was the material rate case.
We have a copy of the bill.
Thank you. You've already amended.
Thank you.
The provision to
Mr. Chairman, can I have a motion to take it off the table?
Is there an objection to taking off the table? Ordered. Okay, what table? We've already amended it to the 10 years. We had 5 years for operating and 10 years for capital construction. Is there a motion to, what's your motion on the 3 years limiting for, we'd have to draft an amendment to limit it to, for operating purposes, for 3 years.
So moved.
To make that differentiation. The language isn't in there now, it's just all limited to 10.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Monroe moves that we amend Senate Bill 543 to provide a limitation of 2 years on for operational purposes. You've heard the motion. Is there any objection? Is there a motion on the amended bill? Representative Achilles moves amended House Bill 543 to the floor to be passed recommendation. Discussion?
Can I just ask what that means? 3032 over on the other side and the other 609.
609 has been subject to some interesting changes. I think there people are still, I don't think we're going to be able to concur with it in terms of, not so much of the split between equalization and the flat grant, but there are changes that have been made that keep intact the entire IED equalization structure. In the event that the legislature passes basic school support and calls it less than 40%, we can call it whatever we want. There's no requirement on how it's computed and that we attach that label to it. So we could, in effect, approve 50% of the actual cost for operating schools and call it 35%, and it would trigger the old distribution system. The IDs continue. There's a paper transaction of levying the property tax. There was a paper that was added the last hour in committee by the IED that says that in the event that there are new programs mandated by the federal or state government for dealing with handicapped children, that these can be financed as regulation expenses out of that existing IED base without a vote of the people.
Is that the way it's built coming out of committee, or is that the way it's out?
It's out of. It's out, and it's going to be voted on in the next couple of days. The bill itself, in terms of the major issue, we're having a parallel run generated that shows their 31% basic grant, the 30% basic grant, and what people are getting now. So for comparison purposes, people will be able to see. I don't think that's a major hang-up of some of these other things that have been tagged on. But I don't think that in any event that there'll be any problem there. The only reason I mention these two factors is I think that it's the consensus of most people who've taken a look at it that they probably would not feel comfortable concurring with 3209's present form. So we'll be able to pick up and add any language I think that might be necessary if people feel something needs to conform. 543 or something else.
Yeah, I was just trying to get out a total of what's needed here and do it again.
That's going to be my recommendation at this point, is that we're not
concerned. I really don't see any conflict.
No, I don't either. I'm just trying to find out what kind of things are coming out with it.
Well, frankly, I'm not prepared to say there isn't any conflict with anything until I see the bill in its final form. I don't know what scriptures have been added. The problem, I'd like to discuss that with the committee at a later point, but the problem I see with 3209 just mechanically are going to just be mind-boggling.
Did they put in a statewide property tax in 3209?
No, not at all. That's Vern's proposal for the conference meeting. Senate Bill 483 has made the declared a VCAS recommendation.
There's no. Would the 10 to 3 year change
yes.
The only.
Yes.
Only
change? Yes.
The 2 year for operating 10 remains the capital. And then they need 2. You're not going to be limited to 3 years.
Oh, when you put this on for three levies, I mean for capital concerns, for capital concerns.
It's going to be used to, there would be an option. They would have a maximum of 10 years for capital construction, 3 years for operating purposes.
What do they have now for capital construction on the
You're having several levels that can extend.
Is there a limitation on the number of years?
I don't think so.
Under the present chapter 280, a serial levy can only be levied for 10 years, and the money has to be spent within 12 years.
Okay. The difference on that will be you're not going to be starting loading it. It'll be, hey, I'm still there.
Capital construction would be subject to the same requirements as current law for operation. You take the motion.
Anything? I guess that, yeah, just real if the 10-year capital levy wouldn't go on the rate base, it would remain as it is.
This bill would give them the option to go at the rate base. for capital construction purposes of growing, this gives the rate base for either person and set the differential for the purpose. It would allow a 10-year rate base for capital construction purposes.
Would allow them to fund capital construction without the front end loading that they have to do with a regular serial levy. A serial levy has to be a set amount each year for the entire 10-year period, an equal amount, whereas the actual cost increases over the period because of inflation. And this would allow the figure to meet the actual needs, dollar needs, in each year.
It sounds like your layout of 10-year levy, Rod, for capital construction, you lay out the expenditures and get your bid yet.
About a $6 amount.
About a $6 amount.
Mm-hmm.
That really isn't necessary for capital construction.
The testimony that we received was that on the approaching serial levies for capital construction, they have to front end load. They have to, you know, the cost increased over the period, the carrying cost.
This is an alternate to bond.
Well, it's an alternate way of funding bonding. It's an alternate way of funding bonding, I would say.
It's an alternative to bonding.
It's an alternate to bonding.
Okay.
And you don't need the same kind of growth in it that you need in that you might need in an operational level. And I really am reluctant about that.
It seems to me that it's an additional tool that, if it's a specific project, there's a set period of time where it's going to be a say 3 or 4 year project. I can see the logic what we're saying there, that it may not be necessary. By the same token, I can see for some capital construction purposes where it might well be of longer duration, and it may not be just a set of one or two goods that they have well in hand before they start. So I can see a local unit of government perhaps wanting to use it for capital construction purposes.
Well, the original plan of the other guy in the years, what's the operating level question? Or was it the whole thing?
Seems to me it was as I heard it described, and as I discussed it with Senator Atiyah, while I signed on it, was it gave that tool, subject to the same protections they have now, and it might be circumstances in which districts would want to utilize it. I don't want to prejudge
the way it's going to use.
As long as there are protections in it that provide that people know what the costs are, what those estimates are required, and you have the protections on how they utilize it, it would be very inconsistent for me in terms of what I've tried to do in my support in trying to give more tools to units of local government that are not. And I think by circumscribing this very narrowly in terms of operating, I'm very reluctantly going to vote in favor of this amendment because I think it's unduly limiting the units of local government who have to get voter approval anyway. But it's an accommodation I'm willing to make because I think they need the tool available.
The amendment 3 years, Mr. Chairman?
The bill has right been amended to 3 years for operating purposes.
I'm persuaded by the students of this.
They can build a school and pass a levy that you wouldn't even know exactly how much it's going to raise.
We've gone through this before. They are required to make an estimate of what that rate would generate over time. Now, all of these are subject to some variation. I think that, Representative Kittles has used amended Senate Bill 543 to the floor with a D-PAS recommendation. If there's no further discussion, the clerk will call the roll.
Joyce?
Aye.
Bobbitt?
No.
Brunel?
Aye.
Horne? Mark?
Aye.
Ricky?
Aye.
Andrew?
No.
Brunel?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Thank you. If we could now come very briefly, and Mr. Munn, perhaps you'd like to join us, I think, to 2104 in the little black folder. I want to just share with you what I was talking about yesterday. And let people think about it, and let people also hopefully discuss it with some of our colleagues to see if there's interest in this sort of approach. As you recall, we had discussed House Bill 2059 as it would be voted on presumably today. We were talking about a reduction of 110, 170, perhaps $200 million or more over the next 10 years in state revenues. One of the points I had attempted to raise, and I would call your attention to the impact statement of amended House Bill 2104, secondly proposed amendments that have not actually been incorporated into it. If we want to phase in some tax relief for Oregonians, I wonder if you want to look at an escalating standard deduction credit and personalization credit as an alternative. If the feeling is you want to invest $100 or $200 million in property tax or in tax relief. The income tax is something that I feel strongly we ought to address in terms of the automatic increase that inflation provides. I think the real likely culprit for indexing is the federal income tax, where it's really necessary, where if we're not careful, in the very near future, everybody in the country can be paying the maximum rate without an act of Congress, just simply allowing people to be pulled up through the bracket.
What would be the effect of what?
Is One of the reasons I asked Richard to join us, we looked during the interim at having some sort of adjustment in the personal income tax to reflect inflation, and the results were dramatic. Richard, you might outline what alternatives we looked at and what the impact was.
We looked at really taking the consumer price index in any 1 year and taking that times the taxable balance. So after you've taken your itemized deduction or standard deduction and personal exemption, and then reducing your taxable balance further by if prices went up 5% 1 year by 5% or 10% 1 year by 10%, I think the cost over the biennium was something like $70 million for that program.
If we were to have tied the rates more directly to inflation, to the cost of living index permanently, it would have been something like a 40% reduction in the general fund over a 10-year
period. That would be calculated each year. You see, the proposal we looked at is where it's 5% this year and 5% next year.
90% fine.
No. The way the proposal was, is if it's 5% first year and 5% the second, you don't add the two together and make it 10% the second. You just take whatever the cost of living or the price index change up in 1 year and reduce the tax balance in that 1 year. You don't build in permanently the adjustment. And that was like $70 million. If you build permanently and build in the adjustment, you in a really relatively short period of time reduce the cost of the income tax in half. Close it, but never reach it.
it seems to me that the people that are hit the hardest, to answer your question, Bob, are the people that are being moved from one percentage step into the next tax bracket. In terms of the increased percentage of taxation, whereas those people that are already at the top tax bracket, although a slightly higher percentage of their income is taxed at the top bracket in comparison to at the lower bracket, they're not pretty bad in terms of the percentage increase of tax that they pay as a percent of their entire income.
Which is about 10 to 20,000 for joint returns and about 5 to 15,000 on single returns. That's where you'd have the maybe you could identify those groups as having the largest increase, since they 10 to 20,000 on joints and 5 to 15 on singles, because they're not only getting hit with, they're getting hit with the inflation or the artificial increase in income, plus they're getting hit with a higher marginal tax rate. There's obviously, but that's good, I don't know. That's ignoring federal payments. Federal payments are not so just going to be used for the spending room. We would live in a state that would be like 10 to 20 ABI and 5 to 15.
How many taxpayers are
going to be taxpayers? A majority of the tax filers, maybe 40% of the tax paid, 35 to 40% of tax paid, maybe a little less than that. But maybe 70 to 80% is going to file a return. I realize that about 50% of our tax comes from over 20 years, about 3 years.
I appreciate that this might be a slight leap here in terms of what we've been discussing to this point, and I don't want to run into the ground, but I did want to put it before the committee. I'd like, if you could, go over the impact statement. Because I think this is the sort of thing we've got to be looking at when we're talking about other potential areas of revenue loss. And even if we're not talking about revenue loss, if we make it prospective, not make it apply to this biennium, but save it in the future, set a mechanism whereby if we take the standard deduction and the personal exemption, we have a credit that automatically increases at some reasonable amount to try and correct slightly for the impact of inflation. That concept, I think, has merit. I think we have to seriously consider passing it this session. I would like to come back to this after you've had a chance to listen. After it comes to look at the proposal, it's written up in the Income Committee report, isn't it, Richard?
Yes, we have some discussion on it.
Of the principle. If you could look at this impact statement, look at the Income Committee, and then consider what alternatives you folks would feel comfortable with. I would like to be able to do that tomorrow. Let's turn to more. Do you have a motion on HDR 14?
I'll move it before you to staff recommendations.
HDR 14, you want to briefly outline what change in health, what the bill is?
I need to staff the bill, Mr. Chairman.
So, I forgot what I
was going to say. We have a little old up
the comments.
If I recall, Representative Wolford walked through the House last session. He appeared before the committee earlier, was interested in having dedicated
mineral proceeds to the homicidal
land.
Right. His interest being that eventually he's convinced that there'll be certain mineral resources that will be developed within the state, and those ought to, become a crewman to the kind of school fund that use the state lands and develop them.
At least Moala oil
starts. What it is, it's to provide for non-seasonal maintenance as we recruit the people. Essentially, it says the proceeds from the tax or excise levied on with respect to and measured by the extraction, production, storage, use, sale, distribution, or receipt of any mineral, and to provide for the cost of the administration and refund the credits authorized by law. And used by the section mineral includes any non-minerals, metallic or non-metallic, solid, liquid, gases, and he had in mind, of course, petroleum products.
Does it not include geothermal?
I don't believe that would, because
we talked about that.
We've already done that,
That's when we got into great discussion whether geothermal was really mineral or whether it was some other resource.
Okay, you heard the motion. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll on sending HCR 14 to the floor with a detached recommendation.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Yesterday, you recall, I raised the issue on 2754. We passed out the bill at that time. I indicated I talked to the chairman of the Judiciary Committee on the bill. If he had any objection, or B, if he wants the bill. He said A, he had no objection, B, he didn't want to see the bill, except if he sent it to the floor. Representative Whiting has been incredibly patient in lieu of, in light of my earlier promise that the committee would consider it, and I just simply fell between the cracks because it wasn't really a revenue bill, and I apologize to you and to her. That's why we brought it up yesterday. I'd like to know if there'd be a motion.
This
increase.
What number?
It deals with the same section of statute we dealt with earlier in the session, in terms of if now there's a differential between personal property and real property that's subject to probate. We passed legislation that confirmed the higher figure. Would lump them together at a still $5,000 figure, still $5,000 higher.
And then did he have to charge the basis of a lawsuit rise of $25,000
over there?
It was higher.
Yeah. It's probably the same scientific basis we had
Aye.
Aye.
representative find his motion passed. Yeah. Again, we can inquire about that again.
Representative Brunel?
Yeah, House Bill 2102. It says the amount of money that rebate brought to the people, the city of distributors, is that what they are? Yeah, the distributors.
Yeah.
There was an amendment to that bill and has a subsequent raise in the union. I don't see the amendment.
Would you like that discussion now, Representative?
Yeah, could that be discussed in the law and maybe adoption of those amendments? Maybe moving the building on the raise in the union?
Let's bring that before the committee. And if time permits, you'll do it tomorrow or certainly Friday.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If there's no question, I would like to adjourn at this point. I think some of us have some material to prepare for today on the material on the transportation policy.
We will bring this back, I hope, tomorrow on the issue of the small woodlot. And I'd like to seriously consider the income tax if people are, I would hope that you'd come tomorrow prepared to vote on indexing the income tax in some form, and I would greatly appreciate your carefully considering the proposed amendment to 2104 and looking at the recent committee report on the impact of inflation on the income tax. Thank you very much. We will be adjourned until tomorrow at 8 o'clock.
Case 37, size 1, June 28, 1977, House 7 of Committee.
I'd like to start with Senate Bill 115. John, Ira, are you folks going to take this through? This is exciting.
I hope so.
No.
Mr. Chairman, I will go to the Attorney General with the Tax Division of the Department of Justice, here representing the Department of Revenue. Senate Bill 113 was introduced at the request of the Department of Revenue to bring to the legislature's attention some of the problems that the department was going to be faced with classification of certain types of property. Already in other parts of the country, there is beginning to develop a controversy as to whether media constituting business records, computer software, files, records of accounts, title records, surveys, designs, credit references, and data contained therein was actually intangible personal property, or whether it's tangible personal property. In other words, if it's intangible personal property, it's not taxable, and if it's tangible personal property, it is taxable. And so before we became mired in a multitude of lawsuits in trying to determine whether this is or is not, these items are or are not intangible personal property and therefore exempt from taxation, or whether it is tangible personal property subject to taxation, we felt that it would be better to bring this matter before the legislature and perhaps at least eliminate many lawsuits and therefore cut down on some of the litigation expense of the state of Oregon. And I must say that just reading through the list, it would look like that there's an awful large amount of items that are covered, but yet when you start analyzing them, you find out that they are very similar in character. In other words, the new or constituting business records, particularly now as we move into the electronic age, is very similar to computer software. You find that files and records of accounts are also electronic impulses that are on magnetic tape. So on title records are practically all new a matter of electronic impulses that are stored in computer tape. Business records, surveys, credit references and data, but the whole thing are very similar in nature, and so we have submitted this list to you, feeling that looking at some of the court cases that have happened in other states, while the taxing agencies have tried to contend that these are in fact tangible personal property, many times the courts have gone the other way and said they're intangible personal property, but there are some other courts that have said no, that certain items are tangible property. This is just really kind of a mess right now to try to determine which way the state should go, and that's the reason why we brought this bill to you. Now, while the bill was in the Senate, one question came up, and that is that the utilities had several court cases in which some of these items had been classed by the courts as tangible property or intangible property, depending on where its status is going to be for purposes of taxation and whether it was even subject to tax or not. And they did not want, whatever we might do in including or not including some of these things, from upsetting those court cases. So that's the reason why subsection 4, starting on section 1, starting on lines 20 and 21 of page 2, have been added for their purposes. Then if you make that kind of provision, in ORS 307-OTO, saying that the provisions of this section shall not apply to any person, company, corporation, or association covered by 308-505 to 308-665. The question comes in, has the Department of Revenue, through all the years, been following the proper procedure in appraising centrally assessed corporations? And to put down in statute what has been the policy from as near as I can find out, and Mr. Fisher, I think, will agree that the policy has been to not include in the valuation of such properties intangible property that represents claims on other property, including money of interest, bonds, notes, claims, demands, and all other evidence of indebtedness, secured or unsecured, including notes, bonds, or certificates secured by mortgages, and all shares of stock in corporations, joint stock companies, or associations. And therefore, we wanted to put specifically in 308.510 that the property does not include these items, and so that is the change that is made in 308.510. This bill really does then, I guess, about two things. One, it brings to you, and the Senate has decided that all of these items listed in line, starting in line 9 through 12 on page 2, is and should be classified as intangible personal property. There is a provision here that whatever the legislature does, it's not going to upset decisions that have been rendered by the courts in the past as to maybe the character of certain property for utility companies. And finally, 308.510 is amended to reflect what has been over the years the practice of the Department of Revenue in appraising utilities and other centrally assessed corporations.
I know what I hear you saying is it's basically because of the growing value of some of these, even though they're difficult to personally assess, that the definition of intangibles needs to be extended to include all of these items. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, we feel that they're all pretty much of the same type of thing, and we're finding that certainly in other states, and even within the state of Oregon, sometimes assessors are trying to go out and, or thinking about anyway, going out and including some of these items as tangible personal property. And we frankly don't know whether they are or are not, and the court cases in other states really don't give us that much guidance.
How about a company that makes a business of selling off their computer tape list of addresses?
Well,
that'd be inventory then.
That would
the Department of Revenue. That's typical of our problem. We think that the tape is tangible, but the knowledge and information on it is surely intangible. Just like when you have a computer software or punch card, the most valuable part of the punch card is the hole that's in it. That's where the knowledge and information is. Now, if we were supposed to go out and assess all these kind of things, the magnetic impulses that are on tape, that's not sure they're not tangible. But the media on which it is imposed, superimposed, that of course is tangible. Here's the problem that we get into. The courts have clearly held that software of a computer is intangible property. But over the other extreme, they said that title plants is tangible property. Now, all this is just an assembling of data, pulling data together and putting it in some kind of form, whether it's in the form of magnetic impulses or holes, or even movie film. We've gotten into the movie film problem. They say that the original movie is valuable, but the prints are not. So this example that we gave 17 illustrations that illustrate the problem, the scope of the thing, and what we're seeking for is clarification once the legislature plays it.
Further questions or comments?
I apologize for not being here earlier, but the federal tax law now will be treating us differently. Or is it because of court cases that this is involved?
No, this is strictly property tax.
Oh, all right.
It would not affect the income tax statute.
Only if you're selling the information for
that would be a property gain and wouldn't affect the property tax aspect of it.
All we're doing here is broadening the definition to include these items.
Yeah.
That's right.
Further questions or comments? Is there a motion on Senate Bill?
I'd like to hear from Mayor Wyatt if we could at all before we move in. Get their perspective
if you want to. I'm terribly sorry. I didn't realize you were going to, if you wanted to testify.
I wasn't going to, but I'm happy to comment. Chuck Williams, Associated Bay of Industries. This bill is a concern to us because as these things are becoming more transferred on the computer from just what would be normal procedures manuals set on a shelf, they have value, but they have value to one unit. They don't have value to another unit in the same business. Like a doctor's client file would be valuable to him, but it may not be as valuable to the next doctor that may take it or something, because you're going to have drop-off. because people like ex-doctors. They don't like Y-doctors. We see that if these things do start being encroached upon, it's just going to cause a neurotic court case is just building up on this thing. It probably costs the county assessor more work in trying to appraise it than he would actually get out of the documents if he passed them. So this is a concern we have, Representative Kelly. And we are very supportive of this bill because it clarifies a problem that we see coming up in the future.
I'm sorry, you were supportive of the bill?
We're supportive of the bill, yes, sir.
Earlier comments indicate otherwise, and I was curious.
It's one of these inverted type of things. Voting yes is voting no. Voting yes on the bill puts the item in the definition of intangible, and then in a separate statute, intangible are said not to be taxable.
I haven't lost faith in that class yet. I was getting quite concerned for a minute there that I had read your
This is a problem. It's one of those inverted situations.
Mr. Klein. Representative Klein moved Senate Bill 113 to the House of Recommendation. Amendment? Discussion? Quorum? Let's call the roll.
Aye.
Baldwin.
Aye.
Klein.
Aye.
Mark. Reagan.
Aye.
Bensley.
Aye.
Monroe.
Aye. Representative Mark. Representative Faubush.
Aye.
Blumenauer. Aye.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Darling is here, I believe, representing Senator Hannon on 428. Welcome, John. Welcome. Do you have something to tell us?
I don't really have anything to tell you about this. Yeah.
You are a co-sponsor of this legislation. Do you want to comment to the committee?
I think that the memo distributed is self-explanatory. It provides running money that would otherwise require bonding supported by two regulatory authorities, including the one from my own area.
Is there any discussion?
Are we being consistent in the way we're treating this now in other areas of authorities where we have, like, port authorities and things like that, and we're looking for front-end money in your assessments of any kind, or 7% to 10%? Did you check that out?
John, I think this applies only to sanitary districts, doesn't it?
Okay.
There are only two sanitary authorities in the state.
Yeah, right, only two of those. Any other kinds of things?
Didn't we do in the version when it got into the difference between the difference between sanitary authorities and sanitary districts?
Right. And that part was amended out about the interest.
Has been amended?
It has been deleted. Opening the Senate Bill 189, which I believe is up for its third reading in the House today, will completely obviate that whole bit of information. As I understand it, it allows only a 1% above cost of insurance.
In your research on this, did you discover that this this process is available to other to other special purpose districts. Irrigation, drainage,
I'm not sure about other districts. The manager of this said it was inadvertently left out of the law when this, when the sanitary authority law was written. As far as other districts, I don't know. And it's published.
I don't want to get too much background on this.
Always a danger. Always a danger.
Does this give the sanitary authority the right to assess for a facility without any kind of a vote or authorization?
Oh, no, no. It allows them to assess affected areas before construction. So, do they run sewer pipe out to remote areas?
What would be the process? I mean, would there be a local election for either being included within the sewer, or how does that work? Or is this just an authority out there building sewers as they come and taxing people before they get there?
No, it has to be requested and asked for.
Yeah, you folks amended the interest out.
It was in a different bill.
Mr. Chairman, this is Representative Wiki. I want to comment on the history. You've seen it before. Well, it was in intergovernmental affairs. Where we were working on partly the interest question, and the interest question is in a different bill that's going to be on the floor today from some sort.
189. But the process, we were determining the difference in status of a sanitary district and a sanitary authority. And whatever other decisions you want to make, this was intended to apply to sanitary authorities, not to districts in its original intent. The House amendment made over in our committee says districts, and
the
summary still says districts.
The summary still says districts. If you look at the top of page 2 on the bill,
it says authority. And so the only amendment we made was in regard to an area of the affairs and deleting of lines. I don't have the original bill.
Do you folks from the Department of Revenue have any comment on this bill?
I don't know. Most of the stamps out of $11,930 because it's only part of the sentence, and it leaves out only one word.
Len is in full weight means.
The directors have been carrying this bill, I haven't been following it that closely, so I regret I don't have a lot of information, but they're tired of making a 250-mile trip, and it came as kind of a surprise.
How many previous committees has the bill been before, John, in the Senate, the House?
It was in the Senate, and this is second in the House.
Mr. Chairman, I move the bill before you pass recommendation.
Representative Klein moved Senate Bill 428 to approve the Dukas recommendation. Okay, do we want, in fact, have we determined whether or not, in fact, we want to correct any language?
No summary, but that can be taken out.
Regardless of the summary, that.
Gentlemen, I think one of our legal types may well wonder what we're saying in line 34 with the word sound discretion.
Oh, I have no problem with that. That's like reasonable attorney's fees.
Whatever they can get away with.
Yeah, well, I love them. I really care. Do you folks have any comments to make about the bill? No.
To use prudent man.
We're using a policy of sound wisdom, sound silence.
The motion is to declare Dukas. Representative Monroe. To get at the point that Representative Fawbush was making, in my reading of the bill, and I think in its intent, the Sanitary Authority Board can, in fact, in its sound discretion,
levy
estimates against the property. That's right. Without a vote, I don't see any provision in here for a vote, so I think that you're perfectly right. That is the purpose of it, to give them that authority to raise that front money by estimating what the cost will be with their sound discretion, and by making levies on the properties affected. That's my reading of the bill. If anybody else reads it differently, I'd like to hear.
That's
what the bill does.
Before sanitary authority is created, there's got to be a vote to authorize the creation of the doesn't there have to be a bonding, or not a bonding election, but at least an election to authorize the expenditures of a given amount of money for the, well, that's my whole question. And that, correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't there have to be some sort of authorization for at least the expenditure of the funds, even if not an authorization for written shape bond?
But I was here, and he's probably,
I don't know,
with the local budget law as knowledgeable as anybody, and going over all the budgets in the state. I think there has to be an election. The creation of the district.
And then after that.
And the board members are elected. But I think unless they bond, or unless they put out a property tax levy for a vote of the people, that there would not have to be a further election. If they have a balanced budget with the resources they have and are doing that through assessment that is not requiring an election, then there would be no election on any part of the budget. This lab levy, I would presume, would allow a district to incrementally finance
authority. Another district.
In other words, well, the developer's dream.
Right now, yes.
Right now, then, someone could sit down and, well, this board could sit down and say, we're going to put a sewer line through down East Street, and there are 100 properties down East Street that's going to cost us $100,000, and the properties benefit roughly equal do this procedure and going to charge each property owner $1,000. Is that right?
I'm not sure, really.
You're not sure?
No.
That would be pretty interesting.
That's Tom John.
That's my idea.
You
know,
the other thing is, you want one million, one of them.
Make
a
contract. Yeah, I'll get my contract.
As you
can. Yeah. Whatever,
let's go on to another bill.
Let's go on. Would you like to temporarily withdraw your motion?
No, we can hold the motion today.
Let's move to Senate Bill 447. This is legislation I submitted to Tia yesterday. He is interested in seeing us take action to clarify the status of homeowner associations. This is not unlike what we have with the condominium, what the owners, how the owners organize themselves. My understanding is that this conforms to how federal government treat these associations for tax purposes.
Yes.
Richard, do you want to comment?
What this really has maybe a development, and in the development, the owners are contributing maybe, let's say, $100 a month to a homeowner association, and they then, the association then turns around and re-roof your house once every 10 years and paint your house once every 5 years and take care of the maintenance and effect of the property. If you do that yourself, by contributing to the homeowner association, the homeowner association will be able to go ahead and be treated as a corporation and be taxed as a corporation in the state under the federal law, just like the federal law would treat that association. The problem comes if they build up any reserves, and then the individual under current law is going to be, because of the reserve, any interest earned on the reserve, the person will be charged. Well, we'll have to include that in his own income and filling out his own return. So this allows that association to go ahead and do the maintenance and repair on the building through a monthly charge process and allow the corporation then to be treated and taxed as a corporation, even though it might not be incorporated. We have a lot of varied treatment of that now, just because of maybe people being ignorant of the law. A few people in a neighborhood getting together and forming some kind of an association for maintenance and then not being aware of the potential taxability of what they're doing.
If I paint my house, I don't gain break at all in the money I spend on it, do I?
No break on it, no. And if you pay it to a corporation that does it, you don't get any break on it either. But if the corporation invests it for a period of time, depending on the lumpiness of their expenditures, you might be involved in interest.
Big deal. Chairman?
Representative Fabish? Representative Fabish moves that we table Senate Bill 447, not debatable. The clerk will call the roll.
Gillian?
Yes. No.
Fabish?
Aye.
Grinnell?
No.
Klein?
No.
Mark?
No.
Reiki?
No.
Bendry?
No.
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 Mm-hmm.
No. Ira or Ted, if you
How do you do?
Excuse me, I was busy studying the problem with the previous bill. Senate Bill 447, Mr. Chairman, may be a useful tool in that what this does is conform the state law with the federal law as a result of a change in federal law brought about by the Tax Reform Act of 1976. There's always been a problem with some of these homeowners associations, either they're in the form of condominiums or some other type of association. Some of them are corporations, some of them...
I think Richard basically outlined that while you
Well, I was going to say that this does conform so that the state law will be the same as the federal and will allow these things to be taxed as corporations and has all the safeguards that the federal law does have.
For, can you tell me what income they're likely to have that might be taxable? Only income on investment is that
probably income on investment, or I would think if they had income on some other sales that's not related to the upkeep, something like that.
Are they required to keep any kind of reserves at all out of another federal law?
No, not necessarily, because this is just sort of almost a cooperative type of thing, and sort of make these owners that they can pay these things ratably to their monthly fees, or to take care of the maintenance and so on, things you and I would use in taking care of our own maintenance of our houses. Only we don't put it away monthly. We usually wait till the crunch comes and then we dig up the money. This is that the association can't do this, and so they put it away gradually. And if that is accumulated, that is not income. Well, under present law, it could very easily be income and would be income. But under this law, it would not.
You're saying that the investment that people are making, following upon what Tony was talking about earlier, for the maintenance of the grounds, the repair of the roof, without benefit of legislation like this, might be
subject to income tax. Yes, and that's part of the problem.
Excuse me, Bob. I just want to clarify that in my own mind.
The co-op under Oregon law is not tax on it, right? It's a corporate system, tax on the state, taxes on the distribution of the proceeds to the
cooperative
owners, is that right?
A true co-op does not pay taxes on the amounts of profits that are distributed back to its owners.
But anything it retains
does. But if it retains over a certain amount, yes, it does. But this is, I shouldn't have used the word cooperative. I wasn't thinking in terms of a cooperative organization. I'm thinking of a
business. It resembles those, doesn't it? Is there a reason why these entities should be treated differently than those, except for the fact of bookkeeping?
Co-ops are already treated a certain way under the tax laws. This is kind of a different type of organization that is very loosely formed. Some of them are corporations, some of them are just loose associations. And what this bill does is treat them all the same way. And really, a co-op doesn't come under this because it's
better.
Income
would be taxable if you bring
in the
anyway.
Right.
What's the name of the big development up by Bend? Sun River, the people buy those units in the condominium. They're owned by people, mm-hmm. And everybody locks up their stuff or puts it in the locker or something, and those are rented those are rent of the people when they aren't used by the condominium owner.
Okay.
That, now, what do you do?
That rental will still be taxed. This bill will not change
okay.
that.
Okay, I just want to be sure.
In under 3 and B, I'm sorry, you've got this one part you got to be sure you're aware of. No part of the net earnings of the organization is going to go to the benefit of the shareholder or individual. So you can't have the organization collecting money and then distributing it back out in some way to the individual, collecting some and distributing it back out. We've had a couple hearings on the bill, at least one before this, and I feel comfortable moving it before the past recommendation.
Representative Klein moves Senate Bill 447 to the floor of the DUPAC recommendation. Is there further discussion? Questions? Clerk will call the roll.
McKillop?
Aye.
Baldwin?
No.
Grinnell?
Aye.
Klein?
Aye.
Mark?
Aye.
Leakey?
Aye.
Gundry?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Thank you, Senator Hammond. We were in the throes of wrestling with Senate Bill 428, and the committee, I think, would like to have explained the mechanics. I believe that's where we left in terms of I can't remember who was raising the question. Representative Bobber, you're the one who's in the contrary mood this morning asking this nasty question. Do you want to restate?
What's the procedure for authorization for either expansion for expansion of facilities? What kind of approval within the district or within the authority by the people affected? What kind of approval do they have to give, or do they get the chance to voice an opinion as to whether or not they want the facility built before it's set?
This chairman members will tell you now, as I understand it, and I might be correctly in this, but there's only two sanitary authorities in the state. And Dixon, and they were created in the one in Southern Oregon was created in the 50s. And then after a while, it was created a statutory authority versus a special district. But they have the same statutes that reflect creation, how to annex, how to deliver services to a special district. They'd go to the vote of the people, it'd be referred to those people affected by that area. They're restricted by what areas they can develop in, by land use planning goals, counties, urban growth boundaries, city urban growth boundaries. So there are statutes that a whole wide range that we could get into on that.
So what this bill would essentially do then, if I'm correct, would once they have that kind of approval, it would allow them to assess that rather than to bond.
What they're asking for is that there were two bills, Senate Bill 427 and Senate Bill 428. They wanted the statutes to be changed so that they would be included. There were two statutory references that were contained in 427, one was in 428. That special districts have, that the sanitary authorities did not have, they just tend to change the statute so that that will affect the same change.
So, is this correct or not?
Yes.
They've actually got to go to the people to get approval of a specific amount or expenditures, even if they have this reassessed procedure. They can't just say, we want to go down E Street, and there's 100 properties down E Street.
And they set those people, they can't do that.
They can't do that.
No.
That was a
Mr. Chairman? I have another question. Senator Hammett, on the, this question didn't, wasn't answered when this was over in intergovernment, as I remember, and this had to do with the fact that you're working on a, you're working on an assist, on a, an estimate rather than on a known cost. For assessment. In that case, there is the possibility, because the bill speaks to making supplementary assessments and rebates, of being in debt, which under Oregon Constitution you can't. And I was that question addressed? Do you remember in the Senate? Still didn't spend very long in the intergovernment committee in the House.
Mr. Chairman, if memory serves me correct, the attorney, Manuel Heisel, for the Sanitary Authority, did address that issue. And if I remember right, the issue was raised on what was the need of having that language in there. And if they put out a bid, and that bid seemed so much, and then there are adjusted changes in construction as our project goes along, and this gives the Sanitary Authority the power to amend, cut back, reduce, give the rebates back to the people on their assessment. But they have to project something out there to present to the voters for them to vote on. If the project does not come up to that cost, then they can refund the amount that the people get approved on a ballot. Now, I could be wrong, or someone from legal experience might have some better background on this, but it's my understanding that they have to put an assessment figure out there for the people to vote on the bond issue. If the project does not come up to that cost, say it is under that amount of money for people to prove, and it gives them the ability, if the project does not go that much, to rebate what the true actual cost is.
It also apparently gives them the power, if it costs more than that, to make a supplementary assessment.
If I remember right, Mr. Chairman, I don't feel that question was asked in the Intergovernmental Relations Committee. It was not asked of Mr. Heisel, and I don't think it was addressed, and I couldn't tell you. I could find out and get back to you on that.
I hate to delay at this point, but I... Perhaps one of our own attorneys.
Perhaps Mr. Jones might outline the procedures. I think.
Okay. What question? In relation to the question that Representative Ricky has asked. If you're going to refund the cost or the excess estimated assessment down to what it actually costs, there's probably going to be some other areas where the cost may be more. And this is not uncommon. I remember when, of course, there wasn't a sanitary authority, but I remember when the sewers were put in South Salem, there was one area where the cost almost doubled what anybody anticipated, and that was that they got so far under the surface and they found out they ran into a series of great big boulders, probably as big as this table. They either had to cut through or dig out or something like that. That became a very expensive process, but somewhere along the line, in all the testing that had been done, that hadn't been found out. Then there were some other areas where they anticipated rock and something like that, and instead of that they could
go along, you didn't even have to shore up the ditches or anything else and put the sewer through, and of course the cost is much less. So we think that if you're going to make this facility work, you're going to have both ways. You're going to have to refund those people where the costs are less, and there may be times when you're going to have to actually increase the assessment because the project is going to cost more because of some kind of a condition that people didn't anticipate. You can have such things as land not being able to maintain itself, so you got to shore up along the way. It's got to go either way.
Okay, but if you've been given authority by the people to issue bonds, which we have to vote on, and you were going to do it the bonding route, and you ran into those boulders, you needed more money, you'd have to go back and get authority, wouldn't you? You'd have to go back and get authority from people to issue more bonds.
Well, either that, or you're going to have to raise the money somewhere, yes.
Now, in this, would you have to go back to the people for a vote to increase that assessment?
I wouldn't think so. Not on this. Let me go through the procedure that the statute set out for starting a project, I think. And that is that the statutes provide for a hearing on the board's proposal, which the construction plans and estimated special assessments and so on are all put out. There is a hearing that is provided. The board has to give notice and so on of this hearing. It may continue the hearing if need be, and it can also change the estimates, also maybe the boundaries and so on, and the area of property that's going to be assessed as a result of these hearings. Then after the hearings are concluded, and the board has its information and believes that it really has a handle on what the costs are, then it has to adopt an ordinance specifying the action of the board and what is finally determined, which will set forth the installations, proposed, estimated cost of the assessments, and so on. And this ordinance has to be published once a week for two successive weeks in a newspaper of general circulation. And within 30 days after the last publication, people have a period in which to remonstrate against the ordinance. And if the majority of the people, in other words, if remonstrances are filed by a majority of the owners of the land, then it goes to a vote. If there aren't that many people that remonstrance against it, then the board can proceed and the election doesn't have to take place. So there is, ample authority for due process and so on. The statute does then provide that the way that this is going to be funded, of course, is through the assessment method on a benefited basis. What this bill does, as I understand it, is permit the board, I would assume, after the ordinance finally comes into fruition, to go out and start collecting ahead of time on an estimated basis from the property owner so that it can have money to go ahead and operate, let contracts, and do all the rest of the things that are necessary, subject to the adjustment after the project is completed.
Isn't it covered in 16 and 17 on page 2? Well, that entire section on.
That was
the assessment and rebate.
that is the part of the bill that does permit the adjustment to take place. Because I think it is seldom, if ever, do the estimates come out right directly with the cost.
I'm just answering the question of applying the debt and making a supplementary assessment. Make supplementary assessment before you acquire the debt.
Well, here, if you could make the... I'm
you have to balance your budget is all I'm saying, aren't I?
No, all assessments made pursuant to subsection 3 of ORS whatever shall be determined and made by an order of the board adopted in accordance with such procedures as shall be established by a general ordinance adopted by the board. Such general ordinance then shall...
So if in that general office stayed in the hall long enough, this bill would be out of committee or table.
I think I've heard enough, Mr. Chairman. I would move it to the floor.
There isn't any constitutional reason for this procedure from being followed.
Let's move it. Mark has moved Senate Bill 447 to the floor to do that recommendation. Further discussion from Representative Monroe.
I have one more very important question. Would this bill put sanitary authorities, both of them, on exactly the same footing as sanitary districts? Or would it give them further discretion? In other words, this bill has been brought to us, the main purpose being to put sanitary authorities on the same level with sanitary districts, give them the same powers. Does it do that, or does it give them additional powers that sanitary districts don't have? And if so, how can we justify that? Question before we move on this bill. I'm willing in this area to act in whatever, by whatever means the committee feels most comfortable. If the majority wants to go on 428, that's fine. It's my intention not to have another committee meeting unless there is additional legislation that's assigned to us for action.
Chairman, I'm going to go 428 to the floor to do that.
We have a pending motion. The question has been called for. Representative Monroe,
I will not support the motion until I get an answer to my question.
The question I would put to you, Representative Monroe, is if you would be willing to allow the rest of the committee to vote,
certainly,
before you have an answer to your question, reserving the right to fight it vigorously on the floor. If you find that there, would that be a reasonable approach to take?
Fine.
The clerk will call the roll on sending Senate Bill 428 to the floor of the DPAC recommendation.
Jones.
Aye.
Baldwin.
Aye.
Grinnell.
Aye.
Klein.
Aye.
Mark.
Aye.
Reese.
Aye.
Van
Hoos. Aye.
Monroe.
No.
No. Mr. Chairman, I'll try to have a response for...
I think that would be helpful. I would also like a copy of it, Senator. The last bill, hopefully, that we'll have to hear is Senate Bill 921. It's in your book, which it might briefly describe for what the bill is and does.
The bill really just defines extended for purposes of footpaths and bike paths. Apparently, the Department of Transportation is having some problems with meeting their special requirements for money spent on footpaths and bike trails, and being able to precisely determine the amount that's needed when you come up to the end of a fiscal year, and you might have contracts out and learn specifically how much it's going to be expended before you write the check. So they would like to broaden or define the word extended as they do on page 2, starting on line 22.
What this does, in effect, I think, is to allow them to count as meeting their requirement of putting in the 1%, even if they haven't expended the money.
Yes, unless the contract that has missing shares.
So that they might defer their obligation over time.
It could be pushing more and more to the end of the year. Does it allow double counting? In other words,
it may not even allow single counting. I think it's an interesting bill. I think it ought to be referred to Ways and Means as an issue that they can take up as they work on our bike path, part of the highway package. I feel very, very uncomfortable acting on the bill, and I think it's more appropriately done down there. When we deal with the definition,
the Ways and Means,
if there's no objection, I won't do anything with it, and we'll just call up to the attention of the folks from Ways and Means. I will hand deliver this very day a copy of this bill to Senator Ripper and or Dwayne Wolf, and let them do with it what they will. They're looking at the same area exactly. If there's no objection, I would like to adjourn the committee. We will not meet unless there is additional legislation.
That's all right.
I think we
get the time servers ready.
Yeah, I know. There's the veterans bill. Are we going to get that out?
If it's assigned to our committee.
No. 3112, the multi-debt increase.
Oh.
7515.
It's my understanding that we stopped dealing with House bills on last Thursday.
Well, we can move that into a Senate bill.
I have any problems. I'm sure the sponsor of the bill would much rather have his bill move. What's the committee's pleasure?
Move or defer.
Is that the consensus of the majority of the committee? To move on Senate Bill 3-1, House Bill 3-1-1-2.
Is that the number? That's the correct number.
Bill number two.
Get the bill out.
75 to 1500, isn't it? Or
15,000.
Is that what it is?
There will be a shift. There'll be two shifts.
Part of the property is left on the roll.
That's what we think it is. Ira or Ted, you folks want to join us? Maybe for the benefit of the community, for the benefit of the community, you might explain how the current program works. How serious any veteran over 65 is disabled. Is that correct? For purposes of this session?
There are two classes of veterans, Chris. There's one who has to get a certificate of disability from the federal government, the military, and armed forces. And once he gets that way, then that qualifies him for the exemption. There's the other class who cannot get a certificate of disability, and who can be qualified as disabled by, I believe it's a local physician.
Local physician, or yeah. County health officer.
But he also has to meet an income test. $2,500 total gross income during the last calendar year.
If he receives more than that, he's not eligible for the exemption.
So you might have a veteran who has a disability from some other source and service insured who has to meet this much tougher test of income. I don't know why they don't change that if you have a problem too. But
I'm sorry, Ted.
Well, I'm just thinking about inflation. That's been in there for a long time, $2,500. But anyway, there are two classes, as you see. And I assume that the guts of the bill is simply to recognize inflation with respect to the amount of the exemption. That's all it does, to raise it from $7,500 to
$15,000. $15,000. And this also applies to the widow remaining unmarried of a veteran without any regard to income. She also gets this exemption.
Anybody on the community who's a veteran and married is negligent if they don't have on their bulletin board at home something to call the attention of the widow to the fact that if the veteran dies, the widow is entitled to attention regardless of whether the veteran was entitled to it. Now, this is something that we find all the time. You know, widows fail the file, and that should be on everybody's bulletin board. Or in the will or something. This $7,500 has been in the law for an awful long time. So I don't know how many years, but
20 years?
Yes, it's been at least 20 years.
Yeah, as long as I can recall. Maybe in 1949 it was $3,500, something like that. But all I can remember is $7,500. And I think there is, you don't want any comments from me about the merits of the bill, but.
Oh, wouldn't bother me. But that's neither here nor there.
Then I would side draw.
What's the fiscal impact of
this narrows the tax base?
Yes, I want to know the shifts and I want to
know. Oh, how many are getting this?
Yes, you told me.
A whole bunch.
is the answer. I'm really getting tired of moving whole bunch.
How many widows are we talking about, even if there aren't? If the advantage were taken of this bill, what are we talking about in terms of the ship?
I know. I think I don't know how many widows.
If that widows remain unmarried, and you realize that is a handicap that would keep the number down.
Getting benefit of exemption are in higher income in the HARP category, at least when we did tabulation on it before. The Supreme Court justices have get veterans exemption now. You have a variety of people that are eligible for it.
They're getting close to violating the secrecy.
No, that's not. That's an application that goes to the assessment, but it's not.
Oh, I public record.
So those people aren't affected at all. You don't get any reduction in the HARP program due to them, because the only way you're going to get a reduction in the HARP program is if the combination of the HARP program and this exemption wipes out all their taxes.
Wouldn't that be the case for a significant number of folks?
Well, the lower income ones, it will be. But again, you have an awful lot of veterans that benefit from the program that aren't lower income.
That's because we've given them so many benefits over the years.
And they have 10 extra preference points.
Yeah, I have one question.
I'm sorry. Yes, Representative Mondo.
In order to get classified by the federal government as a disabled veteran, does the disability have to be military related?
Yeah.
To get the, under the first part.
Well, to get the contributing from the armed forces, 40%.
Be able to qualify by
your. But
under the second part.
But that, in order to do it under the second part, so you've got to make the $2,500.
Right.
So that's going to eliminate virtually everybody.
We didn't mention that there. The people in the Spanish-American War, Philippine Insurrection, don't have to meet any of those qualifications.
You mean all of them?
There's a few of them that are making more than $2,500 a year.
Call for the question of the money.
The question's been called for. There being no further discussion. I guess the clerk will call the roll.
Achilles?
No.
Barber?
Aye.
Grinnell?
Aye.
Klein?
Aye.
Mark?
Aye.
Ricci?
No.
Ben Bree?
No.
Monroe?
No.
Mr. Chairman?
No.
They're all the veterans.
On the very day that I have to do it.
Are you saying please do it?
Yes, well,